Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. Thanks very much for downloading this episode. Absolutely loads of stuff to talk you through this week. Ben, what are we going to be talking about?
Yeah, we got a ton coming in this week, Pete, on the wake of CES and a couple updates from Twitch and YouTube as well. Tons of new streamer tech coming out from Cooler Master and Razer and a bunch of other brands. Some of the top streamers coming out of 2022 on both YouTube and Twitch. We had some YouTube partner program changes and some monetization concerns coming out last week, as well as OBS Studio 29 and a whole lot more we talked about this week.
Yeah, it's an absolutely fantastic discussion that we had this week. Loads of interaction with chat. I think we ended up pushing almost an hour. So settle in with whatever you're doing whilst listening along to the Gaming Careers Podcast, and let's jump in.
So on the Twitch side, no surprise, XQC was the number one streamer by a landslide with 224.5 million watch hours, I believe, on here, which is crazy. And then a lot of the usual suspects also in the top 10. If you're from the US, you probably know Asmongold and Hassan and Trainwrex. And then also a couple other of regions kind of coming in here, like Ibai and Auronplay and Gauss, who I think have also been in the top 10 forever. Pete, so we keep seeing the rise of the Spanish-speaking streamers on Twitch, and even some Japanese representation here as well, which I believe is AVA Shaka, who is an Apex player. So cool to see a kind of a range of different streamers here, and yeah, XQC is just continues to be crazy, honestly.
Yeah, no real big surprises, I don't think, from this list. As far as I can see, it's usually the people that you'd expect to see on the Twitch side. I think maybe the side we're both less familiar with is the YouTube top streamers. You've probably already had a look at this tweet, haven't you? But you'd expect Ludwig to be there, as well as, you know, some of the people that signed big contracts with YouTube, Dr. Disrespect also. Actually the number one spot is taken by iShowSpeed, who I'm not hugely familiar with, but I did see that he, you know, did videos with Mr. Beast and the Sidemen when they were over here doing the UK football charity match. And I think he's absolutely blown up in the past year. So actually dominating the most watched gaming streams as well over on YouTube. I think he does a lot of FIFA, like football-based stuff as well. Anyone else here jumping out at you as a surprise?
Not too much. I think we do have a VTuber on here, which is pretty interesting. And a couple other... It seems like there's more region variety over on YouTube versus on Twitch, which is really English and Spanish speaking for the most part, with a couple of... Japan streamers in there. We have at least two in here for YouTube and some other countries as well kind of coming in. So maybe a wider, more global audience on YouTube, which makes sense for the platform, honestly.
Yeah, it seems to be a bit more evenly spread, I would say, as well. But let's just jump straight into talking about Snap Camera, should we? Because I've actually never used this, but it was on my to-do list of a video to make for, well, how long has it been out for? Probably a couple of years now. It was really a cool feature. If you've ever used like Snapchat lenses or Instagram filters that can sort of put masks on your face, those kind of things, it was essentially a way of being able to do that through their software and then adding that camera into Zoom or OBS or any kind of software that you're using on your computer. So yeah, really cool. But unfortunately, they're now taking it away. And because it's like linked to a cloud service, when they take it away, it's probably no longer going to work. You're certainly not going to be able to install it anymore. Ben, have you ever used this software?
I have not. I've seen people use this before, and I know it was, for certain types of streamers, it was very popular. So it's sad to hear that shutting you down. I imagine it probably wasn't super used from what I saw. I didn't, at least from what I watched on Twitch, I didn't see a whole lot of it, or YouTube as well. But again, it was pretty important, I think, to some streamers. And I know, Pete, it looks like some people are trying to keep it alive even after it's being shut down by official ways.
Yeah. So another streamer, educator, creator, Nutty, who I'm sure you're all familiar with, has released a video basically teaching you how to keep using the software, or so they hope. They've got fingers crossed that they are sort of caching a lot of the filters offline, and hopefully Snapchat doesn't ensue that and try and take down all of these offline filters. But I think when I watched the video, they had like 10,000 plus different filters saved and cached on somebody's hosting the server, basically. So hopefully people that are still wanting to use it, can follow the instructions in that video to be able to keep using Snap Camera. And shout out to Nutty for creating a resource there to be able to keep using it, because I think it's one of those things that if people have made their streams popular using face filters like that, or have even linked it into alerts, or people subscribing can enable a filter, then it's a pretty irreplaceable piece of software. It's a shame that they're shutting it down. I imagine they just weren't seeing enough use from it. After Snap Camera, we have one very small Twitch update. Last week's show was dominated by Twitch updates. This week, we still do have one. Ben, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, this was just a small one that I found actually while I was streaming one day, and I didn't see anybody talk about it, so I kind of wanted to show it on our show here. And this one's a little weird because I've only seen it specifically in the dock window in OBS. I tested on Firefox and Chrome, and I couldn't get the show, so Twitch may still be testing it on certain browsers and not others. But basically, if you post a Twitch link in Twitch chat, so if I was to post twitch.tv/gamingcareers, for example, it would actually show a little thumbnail preview of the channel now in the chat box. And I think I have a picture here you can show people, mm-hmm. Pete. But it'll show you like the name of the channel, whether they're verified or not, and actually the bio that you put on your channel too, which the bio I feel like didn't get a whole lot of use before, but it's kind of cool that it shows up in the chat now for a preview. And this is great if you want to shout out somebody or link to somebody else who's in your chat or something. And I like this change a lot. So I hope they roll it out to everybody. Again, not everyone might have this yet, but pretty cool from what I've seen so far, Pete.
Yeah, I especially think if they're going to link this into, you know, ways of being able to shout out the person that's raided you, or, you know, if somebody drops in your chat that you know is a streamer friend of yours, little commands where you can just paste their link quite easily and see a little snippet and get people to follow across. I think one of the big problems with Twitch is trying to cross-pollinate and collaborate and make sure that communities follow each other, and any way that they can highlight different Twitch channels by doing things like this in chat, I think it's well worth doing. But that's it for Twitch. We've got quite a lot to talk about on YouTube. Why don't you kick it off with the first update?
Yeah, I hope we'll get more on Twitch next week. We'll have to see. But there's three big things on YouTube, the first of which is a pretty nice quick update. And that is that shorts on YouTube, now when you are live and someone watches your short, it'll put a red ring around your icon and show the person that you're currently streaming if they see your short, which I think this is already somewhat on the app, Pete, for videos and things like that if you're browsing. But now it's coming to shorts too, which I think we may have teased this before. They talked about the fact that it was coming, but looks like it is live on mobile now. So this is another great way to push live discoverability on YouTube. And I'm pretty excited to see it. Have you seen anything on this from your end yet, Pete? Or maybe during the podcast, we'll see some people come in?
Yeah, I mean, I probably don't have enough shorts to be able to test that or enough viewership on the few shorts that I do have. But we saw this update last year where it was the VODs, wasn't it? So if somebody's watching a Gaming Careers video right now, they should see a red ring around my profile picture. Actually, probably doesn't help that my picture is red. I should think about that. But showing that I'm live, and then one click on that takes them through to this live stream. So now that same feature has rolled out to shorts. Obviously, some creators have absolutely blown up on shorts. So this is really cool if you're combining shorts and live streams, both on the platform and with YouTube. Again, better discoverability. And YouTube just keeps pushing these features because they have this sort of trifecta of different video styles, live streams, shorts, YouTube videos, long form. I mean, they do also have stories and community posts and things, but I don't think people really care about them too much. So this is really cool. There's also a little bit of an update about the ad rev share that's rolling out, but I think we're going to get into that as we talk about the YouTube partner program changes. So we could actually just jump straight into that if you wanted to, Ben.
Yeah, let's cover that really quick because this literally just came out today, which is great timing. Sometimes we get good stuff for the podcast from these guys. But the long-awaited new partner program terms are coming out. And the most important of those is that the shorts monetization is in this agreement. So as of today, if you're in the partner program, you should soon be getting an updated terms that you have to accept within the next 6 months. I think they said by July 10th. So 10 months from today, or sorry, 6 months. And after February 1st, you'll be able to start earning shorts monetization, which is super exciting. And I know a lot of people waiting for this one in particular, but the update should start coming out today. It looks like pretty much everything else is mostly the same, but the shorts obviously is the big difference. You just have to accept a couple different modules as part of this process. So pretty exciting. I think it may take a bit for everyone to get this notification if you're already a partner. But the shorts, honestly, that's going to be a huge piece, the monetization piece. I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been the talking point for probably the last 6 months as this battle between TikTok and YouTube and Instagram, who are all doing the same vertical video format, rolls out. If YouTube can nail the monetization like they have with long form, then I personally, I don't see TikTok surviving unless they can offer something comparable. I constantly see memes of people that have been paid by TikTok for a million views or even tens of million views, and they're getting, you know, less than $1,000. So if YouTube can nail this, and really they probably don't even know if they're going to be able to, like, how successful it's going to be, because it's going to depend on the advertisers. If enough advertisers get on board, then the ad rates go up, then the creators earn more money, YouTube earns more money, and we get to see it being a success. So fingers crossed for, because there's a lot of creators that are really pushing shorts hard and definitely deserve to have monetization features pushed out. So I'm glad that they've prioritized it and that it's coming as quickly as February the 1st. And yeah, I'll definitely be looking through the terms and accepting them as soon as I see them through my dashboard. You've been experimenting quite a lot with TikToks and shorts, haven't you, Ben? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, like, one of the big issues with TikTok is the fact that pay is really bad right now for people. I think even Mr. Beast was memeing about how little he was getting. I think is he the most followed TikTok account now too, Pete, on top of YouTube? I think possibly. He's got both of those covered. And he's making like dollars on TikTok, which is crazy, from their fund system. So if YouTube Shorts can have a better monetization system with actual meaningful pay for people, then that's going to be huge. I personally have not seen as much reach on TikTok Shorts, or sorry, on YouTube Shorts as I have on TikTok. So that could be a factor. If people are getting more reach on TikTok, then they might still go there. But maybe TikTok becomes the first step in your funnel, and then you push people to Twitch or YouTube or Instagram as like the actual core. That'd be kind of interesting. So we'll have to see what they end up doing, if TikTok will come back and have their own response to this, or if they'll kind of be happy to just do what they've been doing so far.
One thing that I think is quite interesting to think about just globally is that I'm probably not remembering correctly, but TikTok's basically the only major social media platform that isn't US-based. If you think about YouTube, Twitter, well, Google's not a social media, but Twitch, Amazon, like all of these are major American corporations, and TikTok is owned by a Chinese company. So I wonder if actually a lot of the brands that want to advertise would be happier to do it through an American company rather than sending their money to a Chinese company. I wonder if that will factor into the success of TikTok versus YouTube in terms of the advertising and the monetization. Certainly for now, the creators, it's super easy just to upload the same video to both platforms. And if you get monetized on both platforms, then it's just extra money, right? But if it becomes the point where it's so different, the monetization that you get from YouTube versus TikTok, then maybe we'll get to the point where people stop uploading their vertical videos to TikTok, or maybe YouTube starts signing exclusivity deals with vertical shorts creators, similar to how they've done with live streamers.
Yeah, it could happen. I know there's been a lot of even like political discussion here in the US and overseas about TikTok. So that could be a whole nother can of worms that would cause issues. But it's interesting because TikTok just has so much reach. And people are still making content for them. So I kind of hope that YouTube does put a little pressure on TikTok with this move, and they are incentivized to pay people more to post on there. Because if they don't, I mean, they're doing well as is. So right now they don't really have a reason to do that unless somebody else steps up and makes them have to compete a bit. So we'll see. But yeah, it's a good space to be in if you're a creator, because there's more competition coming out, which means you're more valuable essentially across all platforms.
It's all about the value for the creators. Right, onto some YouTube updates that you've pulled, actually. I haven't even read these yet, but you've noted down here that YouTube starting to possibly demonetize or age restrict mature gaming content. Do you want to talk us through this, Ben?
Yeah, this is sort of the dark horse of the podcast, I think, in a way that I haven't really seen a lot of discussion about this yet, but I think it could blow up in the next week or so. But basically, there's been in the last couple of days a lot of channels and videos getting either demonetized or age restricted because of some new changes that YouTube has made to their policy for monetization, or just even seeing a video at all for the age restriction piece of it. Specifically, it really affects gaming creators, though, because of some of the new policies they have around what counts as ad friendly content. And there's kind of two main things that are happening. The first is that they're really taking a harder stance on profanity in videos. So if you use any profanity in the first like 8 to 15 seconds, then it's now much more likely that your video will get demonetized or at least limited monetization. And we've seen a lot of creators, even some on trending, who are having a ton of their backlog demonetized or age restricted because of this change, which is crazy. And then also there's another change to specifically gameplay where gory injuries are present after the first 8 seconds. It's very specific wording they have on here, but basically violence in gaming is going to be a bit more looked at basically by monetization. So if you have stuff in the first 8 to 15 seconds, I don't know why that's the number, then be careful, because it's likely that your stuff might get demonetized if it has any sort of profanity or gore in that time period. So kind of strange. And even after that, if your video has excessive amounts of profanity or gore, it could still get demonetized. So I don't think this has been widely seen yet. I have some links in here, Pete, for the actual update articles from Google and YouTube that talk about this. I know there were some videos from like Moist and a creator named RT Game that talked about this, and a lot of their backlogs have gotten demonetized. But I wouldn't be surprised if this starts hitting more people in the next month or so. So just keep an eye out in case you see any of that.
Yeah, we'll put the links that you've mentioned down in the description. I'll actually pull them up on screen now. They're not the most exciting articles to read through, but they do kind of break down in quite a lot of detail what is and isn't accepted, including their new inappropriate language filters and things like that. I'm not particularly surprised. Like, as YouTube becomes a bigger and bigger platform and there's no restrictions as to the ages that are watching it, it doesn't surprise me that they're going to reduce the ad suitability of videos that, you know, swear in the first 15 seconds and things like that. But yeah, this is certainly going to impact a lot of gaming creators, because a lot of gaming creators are either taking highlights from their live streams where maybe they do swear, or are more aimed at that teenage plus age range. But if you want the big bucks from monetization, you're probably going to have to either start bleeping it or cutting it out of the videos that actually get released on YouTube. And it's not the first time that we've seen the restrictions tighten around the inappropriate language filters and things like that, but it probably won't be the last. It wouldn't surprise me if that 8 to 15 seconds extends all the way out to being the length of your video at some point.
Yeah, I think the tough thing for this, from what I've seen from creators who've been hit by it, is the fact that it applies to your entire backlog. So I think this creator whose video I watched, RT Game, had like years worth of videos. And just because of this new change, where he had a couple things in the first 8 to 15 seconds, a ton of his stuff got demonetized or age restricted. And he can't appeal it either, apparently, from what he's been saying. So that kind of stinks, because his argument was, you know, if YouTube does this again and makes some new policy update that affects everything retroactively, then how do you adjust to that? And so it does kind of bring up the fact that, like, at the end of the day, you're still on this platform who can kind of change what they want to have on the platform at any time. And so that's why it's important to be on multiple platforms. Like if you're on Twitch and YouTube or Patreon or whatever else, that helps just in case, because I mean, at the end of the day, it's Google's platform, right? So you never know what they're going to do.
A couple of good comments from the live chat. Method says, this is a bummer. I'm not a cursing sailor, but looks like I'm reserving swearing completely now. I mean, that's probably a wise choice. If you read through this document, especially, it's going to make you think, I'm not going to earn any money if I'm going to start swearing in the first 20 seconds. And then Chub Fondue says, sounds like intros will just become 15 seconds long until they do more. Yeah, that would be the funny change if people just put a 15 second intro. We go back to the long intros on YouTube videos that nobody wanted, and I'm so glad that they've gone. But just to get around this 15 second barrier, I think that will probably be a short-lived workaround for this kind of solution. But yeah, maybe that's the case. Yeah. Anything else on the YouTube side, Ben, or are we done now?
I just want to say, I think we'll see more coverage of this probably, so keep an eye on it. I wouldn't be surprised if like we see a Mogul Mail video and some more discussion come out, because I think there should be more of a big deal being made about this than there is right now. So we'll see, but hopefully you guys are the first ones to kind of hear it and see it on the podcast.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. Right, well, let's get on to what this channel is kind of famous for. OBS Studio updates. We saw version 29 come out yesterday. I mean, full disclosure, I haven't updated to it. Usually how I approach these kind of things is I let the dust settle. We'll usually see a couple of hot fixes within the first week or so. Because although the OBS team, they have a whole beta program where people can test the software for a few weeks and they try and iron out as many bugs as they can, the number of users that are testing the software compared to when they push an update actually live is minuscule. It's probably less than 1%. I don't know the numbers, but that would be my guess. So now that the update is official and whenever you next open OBS Studio, you'll see that there's an update available. We're going to see more bugs being reported and a few of them ironed out. So take your time. There's no rush. There's nothing so huge in the update that you have to rush to get it unless you really want one of these new audio filters. But it is interesting how quickly they're pushing out the updates. I don't think they're as big as they used to be in terms of feature set, but I prefer them on this more consistent rollout because it feels like we have fresher software always to use. So I'll share the GitHub release page, which is sort of where they detail all of the different changes that made it into version 29. Quite a lot of the focus has been around the AV1 encoders. We've already had the NVIDIA AV1 encoder implemented. Now we have support for AMD as well as Intel's AV1 encoder. Still no support on the live streaming front from platforms like Twitch for actually streaming in AV1. But they've been testing it for so long that I imagine it must be around the corner at some point. But again, it probably comes down to the viewers and which browsers are actually supporting AV1. What else have we got in here? We've got another encoder for HEVC, which is H.265. Two new audio filters. These are probably the most interesting bit to talk about, Ben. I can talk through them, the upward compressor filter and the three-band equalizer. Obviously, a three-band equalizer, if you've watched any videos on this channel, I'm hoping you know what an EQ filter is. Three-band just means that you have three different parts of the frequency spectrum to be able to actually equalize. So it's a simple EQ. But previous to this, we've always had to add an EQ through a VST2 plugin, such as the Reaper plugins. Now there's going to be a simple one implemented directly into OBS. I haven't actually played around with it yet. That's on my to-do list tomorrow because I'll probably be making a video on this week. In fact, I definitely will. The upward compressor filter, that works the opposite to a traditional compressor. And initially when I read this, I thought it must be like an expander, but it's actually the opposite of an expander. So you set a threshold, anything below that threshold will be upward compressed, so be raised in volume. So it's designed to help quiet sounds be louder. So if you have both a compressor and an upward compressor, you're essentially raising the quiet volumes up and bringing the loud volumes down. So all of your volumes sit inside of a reasonable volume level for your audience. Does that make sense, Ben? Have I explained that well?
Yeah, I'm over here taking notes, Pete. I'm learning from you right now on the audio side, especially. Those are super cool, especially for the upward compressor for some people. I got to say, I think the thing I'm most excited here is the AV1 stuff. I know it's not yet live on streaming platforms. I think I don't know a lot about this backend stuff. Seems like that's a lot of hype around that, and that could come to Twitch and YouTube and that kind of stuff soon. But even just for recording, I think AV1 is really huge for a lot of more clarity. And so it's cool to see it come for both Ryzen and Intel stuff and not just AMD, because I think that's going to be a huge part of future tech. If you do a lot of recording like I do via OBS for YouTube and stuff like that, then it's a huge help for that.
Yeah, we've actually got Xeldre, who helps develop a lot of the OBS side of things, in the chat right now. He says, hopefully there'll be more better users since you can now select that as an update channel. So yeah, let's highlight that as an update. There are now new update channels. You can opt in to receiving the updates for release candidate builds or better builds on Windows only. So you can essentially always have the most up-to-date version, even though it's probably likely to be a little bit buggier because it's going to be either release candidate or better tests. But that's a really nice update to be able to select those for the people that, you know, always want the latest and greatest or want to be testing without necessarily going live to stream. Other updates, a couple of Mac focused ones. So support for Mac OS Desk View, as well as the ProRes and HEVC encoders on Mac OS. I can do some tests on that because I have a MacBook Pro, so probably will be testing that for the video launch as well. And then finally, the WebSockets plugin has been updated to version 5.1. It says here that it has a number of bug fixes, UI improvements, and new stream reconnect events. So some improvements to WebSockets as well. There's a whole bunch of tweaks and improvements. I won't go through all of those and bug fixes. I'll highlight the most important ones in the video that'll be going out on the Gaming Careers channel this week. And I also shared the tweet yesterday. I noticed that OBS actual Twitter account hadn't tweeted this out yet. But they had updated and released it on GitHub, which I follow. So I thought I'd take advantage and quickly tweet out that it had been released, but then thought kind of guilty as soon as I had sent the tweet out, thinking they probably don't want a whole influx of new users, and that's why they're trying to do it slowly. They want to see any bug reports coming in and see if they can hotfix them. But they did eventually tweet out overnight here for the UK, so probably in American time zones, that it was now live, and I imagine the devs there are hard at work fixing bugs that people are reporting as they come in. I actually know a whole bunch of people that haven't even updated to OBS Studio 28 yet. Are you one of those people, Ben? I feel like you might be.
I have. Yeah. I was actually really excited for it because I love the new look of 28 and up. I had issues with a specific plugin not working, and it may honestly work now. I tend to update things right before I want to stream, and then they don't work, and then I panic. So I've held it off for now, but at some point I'll do it, especially if the virtual camera plugin is working, then that's the most important one for me. So I'll have to check out your video, Pete, for sure.
Yeah, we will do. We'll definitely cover that. Right, off the OBS topic and on to talking about NVIDIA and their updates that they have sort of talked about. I don't think this has necessarily been released at CES, but I saw the blog post just before. I imagine NVIDIA probably are at CES. But they've done a whole bunch of new updates, laptops and all those kind of things. But really just two kind of interesting things I think that we'll talk about now. Video super resolution and eye tracking or eye contact. Let's start with video super resolution. This effectively is going to be coming out for people watching any video through a supported browser, which I think right now is Chrome and Edge, possibly Firefox coming in the future. I imagine Chrome is any browser running Chromium. Anyway, what does it do? They've actually released a video. I'm not sure how true this video is. It wouldn't be like NVIDIA to lie about it, but essentially they're going to be able to artificially and use AI to upscale video quality. So you're watching something at 1080p, and that's the max resolution that was uploaded, or it's being streamed at that quality. And they're going to upscale it using what they've learned through AI and their engine to make it look higher quality. The example here is nuts. It's probably not going to come through on a live stream to YouTube, but again, we'll be putting the video link in the description. Go and check it out. It literally looks like you're looking at a 720p video, and then it goes to 4K and everything is super, super crisp. So I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case, but I'm super excited to test this out just purely because it should technically be for any video on the internet, right? So it doesn't matter if it's a YouTube video or a live stream, it's going to make the quality look better. And as long as it doesn't have horrible artifacts the whole time, I'm definitely going to enable this and make sure that I'm watching, you know, live streams in AI-driven 4K. So yeah, really excited about this one, Ben. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I this is one of the things I'm most excited to about CES because, I mean, my immediate thought for this was Twitch. They show Apex in the example, Apex Legends, and the difference in the upscaling. So if this can improve live streams too, it's going to be amazing because games like Apex are notoriously hard to stream at a decent quality and make it look good. So if you can get this out of just the browser without having to do anything in the OBS side, then this is really nice to have for viewers. And obviously videos would be really cool too, but I think live streams are still not quite as good as they could be. And this could be the one step closer to really clear streams, especially for high FPS or motion games. So I'm super excited for this one, Pete.
Yeah, and the other one that they announced was eye contact. Now, I had some interesting responses to this, but I'll start by showing the video in case anybody doesn't follow me on Twitter and somehow didn't see this. But they've also released an update to NVIDIA Broadcast, which is their sort of AI-driven enhancement suite for people that are using broadcast applications. This is called the eye contact update, where they essentially are going to snap your eyes to the camera. So you can be reading off a screen and using AI, they will then snap it across to the camera. There's a couple of really interesting things about this demo. I'm just going to replay it a few times. So we see it in the NVIDIA broadcast application. The first thing is a lot of people pointed out in the comments that his eyes don't really look like they're looking at the camera. I think that's probably just because I compressed it down to a GIF and then tweeted that out. It looks fine to me when I'm watching the actual YouTube video, but maybe there's a hint of truth in that. The more impressive thing to me is this is through his glasses. They've specifically chosen somebody who's wearing glasses, and glasses make everything to do with eye contact much trickier. The reflections that you can get sometimes looking at different light, but also you know, it makes your eyes bigger if you're wearing lenses, and it still managed to map that. And you can see, if I replay this a few times, he blinks a few times and the blinks come through as well. Some people think it looks super unnatural, and I think the use case of having it enabled the whole time is going to be really unnatural. I don't understand why anybody would leave this on for their streams and pretend to be playing games whilst just staring dead at the camera the whole time. But for people recording YouTube videos or Zoom meetings and being able to toggle this option on and off, where you can read notes and look like you're engaging still at the camera, I think this is going to be huge. And if it's in any way similar to their background removal or their noise removal with microphones, this is going to get better and better as more people use it and the AI learns from how people are using it. So I'm actually excited about this one, but I understand people's reservations and how it can look kind of creepy. But I think people that are going to use it the whole time are intentionally going to do it to look creepy rather than actually use it for that feature.
Yeah, I mean, it is really cool to see. So just to describe it for the audio listeners, if you can't see it on screen, the guy who's giving the example is looking clearly to the side, but it snaps his eyes to the camera as if he's looking at the camera anyway. It's like he's reading off a script basically to the side. And I kind of agree that it looks like he's not quite looking at the camera. It's like a little bit off center or something. But that could just be this specific example. I think they showed two examples of this so far. But again, to your point, Pete, this is the first version of this that we're seeing. So assuming this gets better, it could be a game changer, even for this podcast. Because when I'm doing this podcast, I'm looking at the camera half the time, but Pete's over here on my left. So I could just look at Pete the whole time and you guys would see this. You guys, audio listeners, can't see it, but you get my point. You could do a lot of cool things with this and pay attention to your content or what you want to talk about while still looking at the camera, which is pretty wild to think about if it works pretty well.
Yeah, I think a lot of talking to a camera, the personality comes through how you use your eyes. If you just stare and deliver to a camera the whole time, it's almost like you can't emphasize things. Whereas if you shift focus, I think it helps with the delivery of a lot of things. That's something I've learned just through recording YouTube videos. If you go back and look at some of the early gaming careers YouTube videos, I'm just wide-eyed staring at the camera from about 5 millimeters away. It's actually embarrassing to go back, but I think everybody hates their first YouTube videos. But I actually see this being super useful for especially people that don't have a teleprompter. So my setup right now, how I'm able to look down the camera lens is I have a teleprompter with a screen that is connected to my computer that uses a third monitor. So the whole time that I'm looking at the camera, I'm actually seeing OBS's preview. But it looks to you guys that I'm looking directly at you. It's a great little trick. I think I learned it off Caleb Pike or somebody like that, has a video exactly how to set it up. But maybe I don't need that whole setup if I can use the NVIDIA eye contact feature. Anyway, I want to brag, Ben. Allow me to brag on this podcast because, you know, it's my podcast. I'm allowed to brag, all right? This video that they put out 5 days ago, you can't actually see it on the screen, but just believe me, it has 18,000 views, all right? Good work, NVIDIA. 18,000 views. But how many views did my tweet where I turned this into a GIF and, you know, just wrote a few words about it get, Ben? Have you guessed?
Too many, Pete. You're drunk with power on Twitter Blue and Elon's new wild ride, it seems.
1.3 million views. I have never had a tweet even close to this kind of viewership. And maybe that's because we now get to see the viewership on Twitter. We talked about that last week, didn't we? Mm-hmm. The impressions tab. Now everybody gets to see that. But this honestly, I couldn't refresh Twitter quick enough. I was just getting so many notifications. And I don't think this has anything to do with me subscribing to Twitter Blue and then pushing the tweet out further. I just think I was one of the first people to report on this. And because I made it into a handy little GIF, it was easily shareable. And because it was something so controversial, people either love or hate this feature. There's a big movement of people that hate AI and ChatGPT and all those kind of things. So a lot of them picked up on it and talked about how creepy and unnatural it was. But I just want to talk about, I probably have my best performing tweet of the year 3 days into the year, and I'm probably never going to beat it. And I'm okay with that, you know, Ben, because until NVIDIA release something where they can just replace a whole human body with an artificial intelligence, I don't think I'll have something as controversial and easy to talk about.
I don't know. You could just keep hoping to give you good AI stuff to talk about. This might be the year for it. But I think really quickly, this is kind of a tangent, but we talked about Twitter last week and the change to the views. I mean, your tweet here makes that change really visible. With, if you look at the retweets and likes and things, you got a lot of those too, but like it wasn't in the millions that the views were in. So I think having that impression after like another week of digesting it from last week's podcast, I think I do like having the views. I know they're kind of controversial at first, but I mean, this just makes you appreciate how much more reach that you're actually getting, even if you feel like it wasn't like a phenomenal tweet. That metric is crazy just to see right there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is crazy. I completely agree with you. I think if I'd just seen the retweets and quote tweets and likes, I would have been like, oh, it was a good tweet. But the big number, the views, is, yeah, way, way outside of my following on Twitter. You know, I've got 30,000 followers, I think, on Twitter. This really got pushed a long, long way outside. And also great for me working with NVIDIA. You know, they're going to be sending me graphics cards for a few years, I feel like, now that I've shown them how much more reach I have on my Twitter than they do on their YouTube videos. No, I'm only joking. I'm actually a good contact of the guy that's on video here, Gerardo. So I was memeing him, sending some updates every time it crossed another 500,000 views. Right, let's get into the main topic of today's podcast, which is all of the different streamer products that were announced at CES 2023. There's actually so many products that are aimed at the wider gaming and content creator markets, but we're just going to try and cover the ones that are loosely aimed at streamers and content creators. So things like microphones, webcams, lights, interfaces. We do cover a few monitors that are more gaming focused, but are just the interesting ones, basically. So let's kick it off and talk about Razer's new camera. Now, you know, when you release a camera and then you want to release an updated, better version of it, you do the iPhone strategy, right? You release an iPhone 13 and then the better one, iPhone 13 Pro. But what happens if you already released your webcam Pro version and then you release another one that's even better? You add another word on the end. It's not X, it's not XL, it's Ultra. So this is the Razer Kiyo Pro Ultra. I think that's too many words to add on to the end of the name of a webcam. You should just call it something different, but it looks so similar to the Razer Kiyo and the Razer Kiyo Pro that they kind of had to keep with the name. But if they release an update to this, what's it going to be? The Razer Kiyo Pro Ultra HDR Max Plus
Super
4K.
I'm waiting for that one, Pete, personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big update. This is a new webcam from Razer. It's supposedly got the largest sensor ever in a webcam. I think from my first look through this website, it looks like it's the exact same size as the Elgato Facecam Pro. They've all got Pro and Ultra in the names nowadays, so I'm going to be looking up to the skies. I try and remember the names. But the Elgato Facecam Pro, when that came out, that had the largest sensor. I think this is the exact same size, but then they wouldn't be so bullish to say that it's the biggest sensor ever unless they were sure about it. So maybe it's slightly bigger. I'll have to do my reason. Like 1/1.2 inch. I thought that was the exact same size. Somebody in the chat, go and check what the Facecam Pro is, because I think it's 1/1.2 inch Sony Starvis sensor. I think it's the exact same sensor, effectively. Anyway, this is a 4K 30 webcam, so not 4K 60 like the Facecam Pro has, but 4K 30. I think a lot of people are okay with 30 FPS for their webcams, or you can scale it down to 1080 60. And the actual footage that they have on the website here, it looks really good. It looks really high quality, definitely comparable to the Facecam Pro. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that they're not doing the thing where they cheat all of their advertiser footage, you know, with DSLR style video. But it looks to me like it isn't a DSLR camera. It just looks like a very good webcam. So I'm really excited to get my hands on this because, I like testing webcams and comparing them side by side. It seems like a lot of the different brands now have basically pushed to this next level of camera quality. I think we wrote the price down. Did I write the price down? I didn't write the price down. I think it's $300 that I read on the website or in their announcement tweet. It's also got something called AI powered face tracking, which seems like one of those features that you probably want to turn off because it's not very good. But yeah, that's the first product that we're going to be covering, the Razer Kiyo Pro Ultra. Haven't had it in hand, haven't had any experience with it. I'll try and contact Razer and see if they can send one out to me. But I'd imagine you're probably going to start seeing some reviews coming up on YouTube shortly from the people that usually get Razer products. But yeah, Ben, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see some actual reviews come out of it that aren't from the official hardware side, right? Because, I mean, never really know until somebody tries it out and can show you what it looks like. But it seems like a pretty cool camera. I like the Razer brand quite a bit, so hopefully it turns out to look pretty good. It is pretty cool, like you said, Pete, that we have more stuff in this space now of that gap kind of between higher mid-ish end webcam and full-blown DSLR mirrorless type of thing. So that's kind of nice. And yeah, I'm curious to see how it lines up against the Facecam Pro, because I was actually looking at the Elgato site and they really feel very similar, even on the product pages, the way they kind of side scroll and the things they talk about. So it seems like they kind of want to compete really specifically against Elgato with this product in particular.
Yeah, I mean, Razer has been guilty in the, well, not guilty in the past, but one of the things that they've done in the past is they've rebranded the same hardware from a different company. So they copy, you know, they got the hardware for the Go XLR Mini and made it, I think it was called the Razer Mixer or something, but it's essentially the exact same product. And they've done the same with their capture cards before. And I think they've just taken the Loop Deck, which is like the Stream Deck competitor, and they've rebranded that to be the Razer one, but it's exactly the same. Like, they just buy the hardware, rebrand it, and then sell it as their own product. So this is actually looks like it's, you know, built by Razer from the ground up. So it is just an enhancement. It might be using the same sensor, but we'll see actually what they do with the software. The software for me is always this tricky bit with Razer. They don't have a great reputation for software, and it's something that Elgato have done really well. And reading through this release, it sounds like Razer are allowing you to control things like the shutter speed and things like that. So they must be updating their software. But they just have so many products that when they release software for it, it always feels clunky. Whereas Elgato really nailed it from the ground up with camera center or camera hub, I think it's called. Anyway, enough on that product. Let's go on to the next one from a company that I don't really think has many streaming products, but has a huge history in the audio space. And that is Roland with their Bridgecast, which is an XLR interface, sort of submixes different channels, controls with dials, as well as some voice effects and things like that. Looks like a pretty interesting product. This is one that I did actually have a bit of a heads up about before it was announced at CES, but still haven't had any hands-on time. Hopefully do get some hands-on time. To describe it to the podcast listeners, it's essentially an XLR interface with four different channels, which are all knob controls with some RGB colors behind them, as well as some mute buttons below. So kind of like an XLR, but instead of faders, kind of like a Go XLR, but instead of faders, it's turnable dial knobs. But some extra controls for controlling your stream mix and your headphone mix, and then some microphone effects if you want that as well. Pretty interesting. Ben, you're into your audio gear because you're a big guitar player, aren't you? So have you got any Roland kit? What's your thoughts on this?
I think I do have some Roland pedals. I don't really use them very much, but I do have them. Yeah, this is kind of cool. I'll be honest. My immediate thought looking at this is it kind of looks like the bottom half of the new Stream Deck Plus with those four dials. It's very audio focused, so you have more inputs and outputs and things like that. But I don't know. To me, it's hard to justify picking this up over the Stream Deck Plus. Now, this just got announced, so my thought is they probably got developed at the same time. I imagine that Roland didn't know that Elgato was making this new product when they were making the Bridgecast. But, I mean, it does look pretty cool if you're really on the audio side. To your point, Pete, Roland is a very well-known audio brand and pretty historic one, much more historic than Elgato. So maybe it's got better sound quality than some of the Elgato hardware. And it looks pretty clean. It's got some colors on the knobs you can tweak. I don't know if you can change the colors. It doesn't look super customizable, but it's definitely geared up for, I mean, the entire product page is aimed at gamers. Mm. And to your point, I don't know if Roland's done any stuff in gaming before. So it's kind of cool to see them break into the space a little bit.
The main difference that you've got to talk about when you're talking about the Stream Deck Plus and this, the Roland Bridgecast, is that the Stream Deck is just a USB interface. And they've tied that into their Wavelink software really well, so you can control audio things, but if you have an XLR microphone, you still need an XLR interface to use the Stream Deck Plus, whereas this is an XLR interface, so you plug your microphone into it. It has a preamp that can power your microphone. A lot of the marketing they've shown in the SM7B, I think any company would be pretty stupid now to release an audio interface that can't power the power-hungry SM7B, because it's just the de facto microphone for streamers. So I'd imagine it's a good preamp. Roland are probably caring a lot about the audio quality because it's what their brand is all about. And you have some other controls. I think I can probably show, is there some photos of the back of the unit here? So you can actually see what you get. I'm scrolling down the page.
At the
here
bottom.
We go. Yeah. Yeah. So 5-volt power, if you're plugging it into using it with a console, for example, or I think it probably can be powered just via USB if you're plugging it into your PC. Mic in is XLR. You also have headphone out, which is 3.5. You have aux and line out as well as 3.5 options. So you don't have to use an XLR microphone, I presume. And then you have a sort of switch for console / mobile or PC. So you can choose what you've connected it to. So this is really, like you said, it's aimed at gamers rather than necessarily streamers. So people that want to play on console and use a voice changer could also use this as their hardware setup effectively. But yeah, pretty interesting product. I hope I get some time to actually use it and put a review video up on YouTube. Next on the list, Cooler Master. Now, these are some interesting products. They released three different products or announced three different products. There's no good example photos. I looked for ages to find some good example photos of these, but they've just got sort of stock images that look like they might even be generated by a computer model. there's no sort of how these look on a streamer setup. So they've released a light, which they've called the Stream Lux, a microphone, which they've called the Stream Lucid, and a capture card, which is called the Stream Origins. Capture card, not very interesting. I think it's effectively the exact same hardware that all the latest capture cards have, like the HD60X from Elgato, probably using very similar hardware inside. The microphone, to me, it's exactly the same as the HyperX one, which I can't... Is it called the Quadcast? Or can't remember if the Quadcast one was the RGB colored one or if that was even a different model. Every company nowadays has a USB microphone that has, you know, different pickup patterns that you can swap between. That I can't imagine that's doing anything special or sounds even remotely great. The interesting thing for me is the light, which looks to be a similar size to Elgato's Keylight Air. So they're smaller lights. I don't know if there's a second image on this picture, on this article. No, there isn't. There is also another picture that I've seen of the back, and the lights also do have dials, so they can work with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. So I presume that they're releasing some app that you can install on your PC or Mac to be able to control the lights. Maybe they'll even go the extra step and build a plugin for Stream Deck so you can control them from Stream Deck. But also they are going to have hardware controls on the back where you can control things like the brightness, which is great because the Elgato products don't have that. It's not something that I really miss, but sometimes when the connection isn't there with my PC or I've turned my PC off and forgotten to turn my lights off, I do have to go around the back and just flick the off switch. Whereas if there was, you know, dials for light color and temperature and or color and temperature the same thing, but brightness, then maybe I would use the backs of the lights more often. But the other thing that I noticed that they talked about is that there's going to be magnetic mounting for colored gels. So even though I don't think you're going to be able to change the color temperature, there is magnetic mounts for colored gels. So if you want to use these as like RGB lights for your background or something like that, it's going to be useful for that. So we'll have to see. Again, this is all of my testing. All of my information for these is just from website articles where they're probably PR releases where they say that they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. We don't know until we actually have them in hand. I'm not really that interested in the capture card or the microphone. I think the lights, if they're priced right and if they're comparable in quality and mounting options and things like that to the Elgato lights, then that could be an interesting, you know, an interesting little look with the magnetic gels that you can attach.
Yeah, this one's interesting. I think it's funny because to your point, I thought the mic looked exactly like the HyperX mic when I saw it. So that looks pretty similar. I agree that the light is the most interesting thing. I did send you another article with the picture of the back. I don't know if you can pull it up or not. But I do see the dials you're talking about to give you some control over that. It's interesting because they say full spectrum here. So I actually thought that meant RGB light. But if they are supporting gels, then it wouldn't make any sense. So we'll have to see. There's not a whole lot of competitors in the Keylight space, so it'd be nice to have more in this area. We'll have to kind of see. I couldn't find any info on pricing or anything yet, either Pete or availability, but it's cool to see them show off some of this stuff at least.
Yeah, I think the other thing to mention about the lights is the mounting. Like how are they going to be mounted? Are they going to come with a stand or like the Keylights do that can be mounted to your desk? Because that's obviously a big feature for them, or looks to me like it might be a quarter inch thread or something like that. So we'll have to see when we get these in hand. Right, what was next? You've thrown me off by adding a new tab. We've done Cooler Master. Next, actually, one thing to mention about the capture card in particular is, although it seems to be the same as the HD60X in terms of the actual qualities and things that you can record and stream at, so 4K 4K at 30, 1440p at 60, or 1080p at 120. There isn't yet any information about variable refresh rate support. And that got me thinking that I had seen another announcement somewhere, which was that Alienware, Ava Media have announced support for variable refresh rate in their live game at Ultra. So this is just better software or beta software at the moment. But if you own this capture card or you're thinking about buying it and you want to run at a high refresh rate or a variable refresh rate, then they are testing that feature out. So it'll be similar to the HD60X, which I think got both G-Sync and FreeSync support in terms of their variable refresh rate. So that was just a small little update. Another big audio brand have released and announced a product. And I'm really sorry about the scaling on this website, but zooming in or out doesn't pull the microphone into the center. This is Audio-Technica's ATH-M50X STS stream set. Another mouthful. Why don't they just come up with good names? Well, this is based on the Audio-Technica ATH-M50Xs, which is a pretty well-respected set of headphones. Quite plasticky, but very cheap for a very neutral-sounding set of headphones. I've actually owned some in the past. And then this is their stream set add-on, which is effectively what they're calling a very high-quality capsule microphone, I think condenser microphone on the end of it. So this could be pretty popular because I know that the M50Xs are very, very popular, Ben. Have you tried those?
No, but I have definitely seen, even when I was kind of into more music production, these are pretty popular for beginning music producers. And last week, Pete, one of your questions was how many mics you'd review. And I kind of thought that we wouldn't see a whole lot of new microphone designs this year. And the one we just looked at from Clonemaster, it wasn't really very new, in my opinion. But this one is interesting. I hadn't thought of headset mics as a new category. And honestly, I feel like if headset mics get good enough, then that could be a huge thing. Because I'll be honest with you, I prefer to just use a headset mic and not have this huge thing in my face all the time, especially when I'm playing stuff and streaming. But headset mics just have not been good enough really to compete with this. And I don't know if they will be this year, but they're probably going to get better. And I'm really interested in this one to see how it sounds with some reviews that come out, because if we can go back to headset mics that actually sound really good, and that's kind of the dream, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen any headset mics that are at that tier of an XLR microphone. There are, I think even Audio-Technica maybe make one, but there's a couple of companies that make proper broadcast-style headsets, the ones that you see on League of Legends, esports, and things like that, that the commentators wear. And they're sort of headset style with a big microphone that's brought right round to their mouth. Or even the major like sports productions here in the UK, typically people have those kind of headsets. So it would be interesting. It will be interesting to test the mic quality. It does look like it could be a relatively decent mic from what you can tell from the looks. As in, it looks like a relatively big capsule. And they've talked about how it's built on the legendary 80-20-20 capsule. It's much smaller than the 80-20-20 is, so I'll see what that means. But the interesting thing for me is that you can buy it in either USB model or XLR quarter inch. So that to me strikes that maybe it is going to be high. I know that just because it's XLR doesn't mean it's going to be high quality. There are plenty of really, really bad XLR microphones out there. But the fact that they have that as an option means that they're thinking that people might use this in their current XLR setup. So I've got my fingers crossed for this one. I don't have any contacts at Audio-Technica, so I'd definitely like to review this. And maybe your prediction is going to be right. Maybe I'm going to review 6 to 8 microphones this year when I thought I'd probably only do a few. But interesting just to see a mic in a completely different style. Like you said, it's not a traditional microphone. It's one that's attached to a headset. I think that's it, Ben, for the major like streamer-based or content creator-based products. But we do have a quick little roundup of some monitors that were announced, because so many monitors were announced at CES. And so, some of them maybe not worth buying or considering just yet, but in terms of what they're doing in terms of pushing the quality, I think are really interesting. So the first two are a couple of monitors from Asus in their ROG versions. This one is a TN panel. It's the PG248QP, which is a 24-inch, 540Hz monitor. So 1080p, definitely aimed at esports, people playing CSGO, Fortnite, League of Legends, maybe even. I have a 240Hz monitor. It's 1440p, so slightly higher resolution. But I can't even imagine pushing past 240Hz and noticing any kind of difference. But I think this is a race for 600, 800, 1,000, 2,000 hertz. Like, at what point does the negligible differences between refresh rates actually matter?
Yeah, I feel like it's just bragging rights, right? And like a CES type of thing. I have a 360 hertz monitor, and I cannot really tell the difference between this and my 240. Even a lot of games can't even get this high. I mean, like, what, CSGO, Valorant, maybe, like, that's it for competitive games that you can push to 500 plus hertz or 500 plus FPS. I mean, it's cool, and, you know, it's fun to have more high refresh rate stuff, but I just wonder how needed this is right now. Maybe games will catch up soon, but a lot of games can't even push that type of refresh rate right now.
Well, there's always going to be the high-end esports market, like the people playing professionally or trying to play professionionally that want to just keep pushing. Because I remember when 120 hertz came out, that's when I was playing semi-competitively FPS games, and that was a big jump. And then 144 was only a slight improvement on 120, but it was still noticeable. Then we saw 240, which I've invested in. I've never tried a 360 hertz like you have. 540 hertz. I mean, like, where does it end? The jump gets smaller and smaller. Like, the difference between 144 and 240 is much smaller than the difference between 60 and 144, or it's much more less noticeable. So we'll see. Yeah, it has to be games that you can run at frame rates above these refresh rates, unless you're using something like G-Sync. But anyway, just an interesting one to pull out. On that note, Alienware, not to be outdone, also announced a 500 hertz gaming monitor. The difference to this is slightly lower refresh rate, although 40 hertz at that range probably doesn't matter too much. But this is an IPS monitor, so not TN. So you get technically better color accuracy and things like that. But yeah, they're still not talking about OLEDs or anything super, super fancy, just super high refresh rates. In terms of other monitors that were announced, ROG also Asus announced another ROG monitor, which is, which one's this one now? This is 27-inch, 1440p, 240 hertz, and an OLED with a super thin bezel. I think this one looks amazing. I hate the stand, but ROG always do goofy stands with, like, LEDs shining down at your desk. But this is probably the first super high refresh rate OLED that I've seen, 240 hertz and an OLED. I don't know if you've ever experienced OLED on a TV or anything, Ben, but it's certainly going to be the future for monitors and gaming monitors.
Seems like OLED's the big thing this year, and mini OLED too, I think. From what I've seen, there's a lot of discussion there, so not surprised that a lot of monitors in this space are getting announced, honestly.
And then just to wrap it up, the last one was LG announced a flexible monitor, similar to what we saw a few weeks ago. Corsair announced a flex, I can't remember what it was called, the Xenon Flex or something. Effectively a monitor that you could bend into different curvature. I think I even tweeted, like, what is the point of this?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Pete.
Like, not the point of, not what they wanted to see, like, one of their influencer contacts tweeting out. But I just couldn't understand, I still can't, to be honest, understand why people want to be able to bend their monitor. Like, if you want a curved monitor, buy a good curved monitor. Because right now you're going to be paying such a premium for this weird gimmicky feature where you bend your monitor. And I was even racking my brain thinking maybe it's for people that want to edit video on a flat monitor and then game on a curved monitor. But I'm like, that's such a small niche use case. But anyway, this is LG's version of a flexible monitor, 4K, 120 hertz, OLED, flexible, and probably going to cost so much money for the one feature of you being able to bend it into a different curvature if you wish to.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those also new tech trends that isn't quite fully there yet. I don't know, like, to your point, maybe people want to use this for certain games where, like, immersive games, they really want to curve it and kind of be immersed in the game, but then for competitive games you want to be flat. I don't know, I don't see myself using this kind of thing yet. I do think there's some cool uses for this in, like, phones or tablets, right? But like, a monitor seems tough to use. Unless, chat or listeners, if you guys have ideas, I'd love to hear it. But yeah, I feel like this idea still has a little bit of room to grow before it really gets to the point where it's widely used.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Maybe at one point I'll get sent one and I'll be like, oh my god, it's so handy being able to bend your monitor. But right now I can't see the point. I really can't see the point. But yeah, for phones and things like that, when you're going to be able to fold them, squish them down, and then stuff them in your pocket because they're all bendy, that I can see. And maybe that's what you need, is innovations like this to then push the innovation down to smaller screens and things like that. But I'm not going to encourage anybody to buy a flexible monitor until I can think of a real use case. I think that is it. That was quite a long podcast. Obviously, a lot of tech that we covered, as well as the usual platform updates that we like to cover every single week. I want to reiterate something that I said last week, which is a huge thanks to everybody that has stuck with the podcast. Ben and I were both gobsmacked at how many people have downloaded and listened to the podcast through the audio apps or watched the video or the live stream, considering we didn't do it for 3 or 4 months. It's like we never left, which is not a healthy thing to be reiterating, because we want to be keeping it up all year round. But it was really amazing to see the community respond to the podcast coming back and so many great comments. So a big thank you from both of us. And unless you've got anything else to add, Ben, I think we'll catch them again next week.
Yeah, I just reiterate, thank you guys again for sticking around, and we're really excited for everything coming this year. Also, these broadcasts are now on the Gaming Careers channel in the live tab, which is super nice to go back and look at those with the full chat experience too. So if you're listening and you're like, what does this curved monitor look like? Or what is this HyperX mic? You can go see it now if you want to. So check that out. But yeah, thanks for listening and keeping being part of the family.